So how many of you here would say, I would like to see the world be a better place? About 80% of you, that's awesome. How many of you are thinking, okay, what I'd like to see is a world where people are in right relationship with one another, right relationship with their creator. There's an environment that's absent of poverty, fear, addiction, hatred, sickness, death, and disease. Does that sound good to anybody? Yeah, I've asked atheists that same question. They said, yeah, I like that. I would want to be a part of something like that. Well, I have good news for you. That's God's vision. That's God's dream. Last week we talked about Revelation 21. It paints that very picture as a future reality. Now I do know a couple things about that. Theologians call that the consummation of all things. And so that's not a present reality. I mean, does anybody have poverty or racism or hatred or battling any kind of sins anywhere around you? Okay. Again, another 80% of you. But I also know this, that it's not just a future picture, but that God is right now in the process of transforming things, and that God is in the middle of a restoration project. Hopefully, most of you sitting here, God is in the process of renewing and restoring you, that God is already at work in your life, and he's at work in the community around us. So here's where we're going. We're in the sermon series. We're in the second week. And we're looking at the book of Nehemiah. And we're looking at what happens when we take our dreams and we combine them with dedication. Because as we talked about last week, is we need hope. We need dreams. But we need to put that hope into action. We need to put those dreams into action. Or nothing really happens. And here's the reality. God is not only at work in restoration and transformation in you. He's actually invited you to be a participant in that. He's invited us to go back out and join him where he's working. So let me give you a little bit of background, because some of you are probably scholars, and you're like, oh yeah, Nehemiah, this is going to be great, you know, what have you. And some of you are like, I don't even know who Nehemiah is. So I'll give you a little bit of background. Nehemiah is this Jewish man, and he is the cupbearer for this Persian king, King Artaxerxes. And the Jewish people have spent 70 years in exile, and they're starting to go back to their homeland. And Nehemiah has some friends, and they come back and they tell Nehemiah, hey, here's what's going on there. And the report's horrible. He said the walls are all collapsed. The temple worship isn't what it's supposed to be. You know, we're in fear of being attacked. Things are really bad. And so in many ways, the very fabric of the city has been destroyed. And so Nehemiah is thinking, okay, I got to do something about this. Now, I asked you at the start of this, how many of you want to live in a better world? Now, Nehemiah, notice this about Nehemiah. Nehemiah isn't trying to change the world. Nehemiah is trying to make a difference in this one little dot on the global map. Now, it's the city of Jerusalem and the temple of God is there, so it's an important dot on the map. But he's only trying to make a difference in this one little dot. And the truth of it is most of us are not in a position to quote-unquote change the world. I mean, if you are, please, by all means, do so. Talk to me. Let's define what change the world means to you. But if you're in that position, please do so. But I think most of us are in a position to make a difference in this dot that Melinda's going to put up on the screen. Do we think we can make a difference right here? Now, if that's not your dot, if you're up here in Kalamazoo, you know, put your dot over there. But how many of you would like to see a change in the poverty and the violence and the racism, or even the fact that only 30% of the people actually connected to a body of believers. How many of you say, I'd like to make a difference in that dot? In fact, I'm willing to do something like that. Okay, we're down to 20% now. Now, so for those of you who raised your hand, I'm going to give you a reality of what happens when we step into that. And two essentials. I'm going to give it to the rest of you anyways. But in particular to those who raised their hands. Now, I'll give you two essentials that we're going to need to make that happen. Now, here's the reality of anytime you try to do something for the kingdom of God, here's the reality. You're going to face adversities and adversaries. That is a reality. The Bible tells us this in 1 Peter 5:8. It says, stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Listen, adversity is going to come. It's like, you ever get that letter in the mail where you're like super excited? It says your name or current occupant. Okay, sometimes that's like trials, adversity, and problems. Doesn't matter. All you have to do is exist, and they're coming your way. Now, we can even step that up, though, if you're trying to step out and do something on behalf of or for God or join with God. Adversities, trials will come. Let's look at some of Nehemiah's. We're going to jump through Nehemiah chapter 2. It's going to be up on the screen. We have some Bibles here, or feel free to get out your phone. It's one thing that has changed in the 15 years. I used to hear paper all the time, and then I remember the first time looking out, like, is that guy playing games on his phone? Oh, he's got the Bible. Okay. That guy is. Okay, Nehemiah chapter 2. So we're going to look at some of his adversaries and adversities. Nehemiah 2:3, it says, the city where my ancestors are buried are in ruins, and the gates have been destroyed by fire. Nehemiah 2:10, when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite, you can never trust those kind of guys, the Ammonite official heard of my arrival. They were very displeased that someone had come to help the people of Israel. Here's the thing. You want to step out, you want to do something, you don't always have a bunch of people cheering you on. Sometimes people are upset that you're actually doing something good. You're actually helping out someone. That's a reality. Nehemiah 2, 13 and 14. So Nehemiah's checking things out. He says, after dark, I went through the valley gate into the jackal's well and over to the dung gate. That's a great place. To inspect the broken walls and the burned gates. And then I went to the fountain gate and the king's pool, but my donkey couldn't get through the rubble. So in other words, you can't even get through. Things are such a mess in this area. 2:19, it says, and when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem the Arab heard of our plan, they scoffed contemptuously and said, what are you doing? Are you rebelling against the king, they ask? Here's the thing. Nehemiah already has this task that's probably beyond what he could actually accomplish. Now you throw into the mix, you've got people fighting you. And I can tell you personally, I can't think of anything that I've done in ministry that was important that I did not have adversity or some adversary fighting. We had our first public service a year ago. Some of you that have been around, you remember I woke up that morning and hit the ground. I never get sick. I was sick that day, thinking somebody doesn't want us to do something. You know? And sometimes the adversaries are not on the outside. Sometimes they come on the inside. And that is a reality. And like Nehemiah, sometimes you'll be misunderstood. Nehemiah was not rebelling. We'll see that as we go through the text. And you'll be questioned that. You know, you'll do something, they'll say, oh, you're just doing that because you're a conservative. And then you go have with some people and they go, hey, you're not turning liberal on me, are you? No, I'm just loving people. You know, and you will be misunderstood. That is a reality. Let me give you a quote from Mother Teresa. You might call her St. Teresa if you're Catholic. But here's what she said. She said, people are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Anybody ever discover that? 100%. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyways. If you are successful, you will win some unfaithful friends and some genuine enemies. Succeed anyways. If you are honest and sincere, people may deceive you. Be honest and sincere anyway. The good you do today will often be forgotten. Do good anyway. Give the best you have, and it will never be enough. Give your best anyway. In the final analysis, it's between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. I think she's got some wisdom there. Now, here's the question, though, that I have for Nehemiah and for us. How do you do that? I mean, it sounds good. It might even give you warm fuzzies. You say, okay, you just move forward anyways. But here's the thing. This is bigger than some broken walls. I mean, you just get some skilled people and you get that done. But we're talking about broken people. We're talking about fallen people. Here's something I've discovered in ministry. It's messy work to work with people. You work with people, it's going to get messy. Everybody you meet, they bring their baggage. I bring my baggage, you bring your baggage. We bring that in. Sometimes we get stuck. Sometimes we're stubborn. Sometimes we like our own brokenness. And there's times where we say, I don't want to change. Other times, and I've noticed this, when this happens generation after generation after generation, we begin to think the brokenness all around us is normal. And we say this is the way that it is. I think the church has the job of going out and saying, no, there's a better picture. There's something better. There's a better way to live. And in this context, sometimes we can become complacent. We can become distracted. And let's just say you overcome all those things. Then there's this reality of, okay, so we're going to get together and we're going to change this place. Now, I know that only 20% of the people that say we're going to change this place will actually join. And so when you look at all of that, it's very easy to become cynical. And I think we live in a world that has become cynical. And it's very easy to throw your hands up in the air and say, well, you know, what can we do? And then we settle for a lesser vision than what God has for us. And that's actually one of my biggest fears in life, is that I would settle for a lesser vision than what God has given me. I don't want to walk down that path. So what keeps us from that? Hope. Hope is what keeps us from that. And if you and I are going to make a difference in our little dot, and you can make your dot a circle or what have you, if we're going to make a difference, we're going to need hope. We're going to need hope, and we're going to need to put that hope in action. So where did Nehemiah find his hope? Let's look at this. Let's back up one chapter. This is really cool where this goes here. Nehemiah 1:5. He He's praying to God, and he says, "Then I said, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of unfailing love to those who love him and obey his commands." Now, that word covenant, it's really a cool word. It's kind of like a contract, except for it's about a relationship. And that covenant is a commitment from God to pursue a relationship with us. And in turn, it is invitation to you and I to pursue a relationship with him. Now, I want to go back to Nehemiah, but I want to show you something. Like, I didn't actually expect this, but I walked through. I thought, let me see what God says after he gives three major covenants. So here's what God says. He gives the covenant to Abraham. Genesis 17:8. He says, "And I will give you the entire land of Canaan, where you now live as a foreigner, to you and your descendants. It will be their possession forever, and I will be their God." Okay, so that's the covenant with Abraham. Makes a covenant with Moses. Exodus 29:45. He says this. He says, "And then I will live among the people of Israel, and I will be their God." God's going to talk about the new covenant. Jeremiah. I'm going a long way for a purpose. Jeremiah 31:33. He says, "But this is the new covenant I will make with the people of Israel on that day, says the Lord. I will put my instructions deep within them, and I will write them on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they will be my people." Revelation 21, consummation of all things. 21:3, it says, "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God.'" Don't miss this, because that's important. God makes a covenant. And every time he makes a covenant, what is he saying? He's saying it's about a relationship. He's saying, "I am pursuing you." And then he in turn invites us to pursue a relationship with him. So here's our hope. Our hope is found in the promises and person of God. If we don't have that as our starting place, man, just don't even worry about that dot. Because you're not, if you don't get that, if you don't get that right, you're not going to get the rest right. What? Why do I care about my neighbor if I don't know that he's not created in the image and likeness of God? That he's dearly loved. You know, I talked about that with Nehemiah, that dot. That was a special dot because the temple of God was there. Well, guess where the temple of God is now? It's in people. So the dot on that map is important. If you find people in that area, that dot is important. And how do we do this? How do we stay on task? How do we stay on task when people fail us? Not if they fail us, but when they fail us. You pursue a relationship with God. It has to start there. And this is what Nehemiah did. So we're going back to chapter 2, Nehemiah 2:1. So it says, "Early in the spring, in the month of Nisan, during the 12th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was serving the king his wine, and I never before appeared sad in his presence." Now let's pause right here. You might not remember this from last week. But last week, the month was Kislev, when Nehemiah started to pray. Like, "Okay, God, give me favor so we can make a difference in Jerusalem." Well, this is now four months later. So Nehemiah has been praying for 4 months. I would say Nehemiah is pursuing a relationship with God. He's pursuing God because he wants to make a difference. Now, there's something else important here. Is King Artaxerxes is the same person who shut down the rebuilding of the temple. So Nehemiah is now standing before the guy that said, "No, I don't want a temple there. I know the Jews are going to rebel against us and what have you." So this isn't a small task that Nehemiah is trying to do here. Verse 2, let's go through that. It says, So the king asked me, "Why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You look deeply troubled. You must be deeply troubled." And then I was terrified. Good reason. The king could have him killed if he thinks he's trying to rebel against him. And so Nehemiah says, "Hey, you're a heathen and we're going to rebuild our temple." No, he says, "I replied, long live the king." Sometimes we could do that as Christians, right? But he says, he's making it really clear, "I'm not rebelling. Really, what I want to do is rebuild this." He says, "Long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried and the gates have been destroyed by fire." And the king asked, "Well, how can I help you?" Wow, Nehemiah's jaw hits the ground. It says, "And with a prayer to the God of heaven," he's pursuing a relationship with God. If something's going to happen, it's going to be God. He says, "I replied, if it pleases the king and you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried." Now here's the weird thing. The king not only sends him, but he sends him with the reply, or with the supplies. So Nehemiah is the first guy that's thinking, "I'm going to build a wall and have somebody else pay for it." I'm not making a statement one way or another than that. I'm just saying this is what Nehemiah did, okay? But why is this king giving him favor, and why is the king going to pay for this wall? Nehemiah 2:8, it says, "And the king granted these requests because the gracious hand of God was upon me." There's no other reason than the gracious hand of God was upon him. Romans 8:31 tells us this: "What shall we say about such wonderful things as these? If God is for us, who can be against us?" Think about our communities. I mean, we have serious issues. I mean, I invite you to come hang out in Wildwood. There are issues that I look at and I go, I don't know how to bridge some of these race barriers. I don't know how to deal with some of these things, but I do know that I can continue to love on people, and I do know, like us getting this building, that was God. I mean, I can't think of any one thing that we said, "Yeah, when we did that, that's what happened." We need God, and God can transform our communities. So we have adversaries. We have adversity. We need to pursue a relationship with God. But there's another essential that we're going to need. Not only do we need to pursue a relationship with God, let me give you a quote from the author of the novel Roots, Alex Haley. He's credited with this statement: "Anytime you see a turtle on top of a fence post, you know he had some help." It's true, right? I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but he didn't get there by himself. And the reality is, if we're going to do something for God, we're not going to do it by ourselves. We need one another. Here's the second essential: join with others who are pursuing God. You can't do it alone. You weren't meant to do it alone. I can't tell you how many times I've sat down and, you know, and looked at things and said, "God, I can't do it." He says, "Great, we're on the same page." You need me. You need other people. We are better together than we are apart. See if you caught those verses, God didn't say, he didn't say to Abraham, you know, "I will be your God and you will be my person." He didn't say that to Moses. He didn't say that to Jeremiah. He doesn't say that at the end of time. He says, "And you will be my people." In other words, it is God's plan for us to live in community. Church and community are God's ideas. They're not mine. God came up with them. And the church functioning in community is essential to God's great restoration and renewal project. The world is yet to see what God can do through a group of people. And that group of people is the church. It's the great sleeping giant that I believe is going to transform the world. Now, here's the thing. You don't have to join Hope Community Church to make a difference. But I tell you this. God expects us to join together with other believers to make a difference, to go out and do what he's called us to do. There's these 59 one another's in the Bible where it says, you know, love one another, care for one another. You have to ignore those if you don't get together, if you're not committed to joining with others. Because I don't know how you do one another's by yourself. You can't do that. We're a body. And God calls us to be his hands and feet. Let's see how this plays out in Nehemiah. Nehemiah 2:15 through 20. And so he's back in Jerusalem and he says, so it was still dark and I went up to the Kidron Valley instead of inspecting the wall before I turned back and entered into the valley gate. The city officials did not know what I had been out there or what I was doing. And I had not yet said anything to anyone about my plans. I had not yet spoken to the Jewish leaders, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or anyone else in the administration. But now I said to them, you know very well what trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been destroyed by fire. And he says, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Let us do it. Not I'm going to do this or you do this. Let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem and end this disgrace. And then I told them about the gracious hand of God that has been with me and about the conversation with the king. And they replied at once, yes, let's rebuild the wall. It says, and so they began the good work. But when Sanballat, adversities are still going to come, adversaries, they're still coming. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem the Arab heard of our plans, they scoffed contemptuously. What are you doing? You are rebelling against the king. In fact, no, we got papers. The king's funding this project. And he says, I replied, the God of heaven will help us succeed. We, his servants, will start rebuilding this wall, but you will have no share, no legal rights, or historic claim in Jerusalem. Okay, here's the reality. Adversaries and adversity, that's going to come. How do we overcome that? We pursue God, and we pursue, or we join with others who are pursuing God. I don't know what your next step is. Maybe your next step is you say, you know what? I don't even know what that means to have a relationship with God. Well, if that's you, come talk to me afterwards. And we could talk about Christ dying on the cross for your sins and for your salvation and him inviting you to join with him in transforming the world. Maybe your next step is saying, hey, you know what? I haven't been connected. And I need that connection. I need that encouragement of other people. I haven't been on mission. Whatever it is, if that's your next step, take whatever step you need to take to move in that direction today.